Welcome to the Blockchain Practitioners Podcast, a podcast where outstanding industry experts share their experience and talk about the amazing projects they're working on. We're thrilled to present you the first episode of our second season featuring Peter from Chainalysis, with whom we'll talk about financial crimes and investigation. Chainalysis helps government agencies, crypto businesses, and financial institutions stay compliant with AML regulation. Their data powers investigation and market intelligence software that has been used to solve some of the world's most high-profile criminal cases. Peter has over 9 years of experience in digital assets and 5 years of professional experience in the blockchain industry, and it was a pleasure to interview him. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Hi, Peter. Thank you so much for making it into the show. How are you today?
I am very good. Thank you very much, Stella. And happy Friday.
Happy Friday. So can you please introduce yourself quickly to our auditors?
Yeah, absolutely. So quick intro. My name is Peter Kehwa. I have a master's in international business. And I work for Chainalysis, which is a top 10 blockchain company, according to CoinDesk, at least. I have 5 years of professional blockchain experience working in the industry, with a specific focus on adoption. Now, when we think about adoption, what it means for Chainalysis is that I help businesses adopt blockchain analytics software for complying with local and global anti-money laundering regulations. And on a personal note, I got into cryptocurrencies back in 2013 when I mined Dogecoin for the first time. So that gives me 5 years professional blockchain experience and 9 years from a hobbyist perspective.
Okay, I love that Dogecoin mining story. It's very rare that that people start with Dogecoin. In general, it's more Bitcoin, ETH, and I think you're the first guest who I think, in my opinion, so far, mines Dogecoin. Why, actually? How did you even get into crypto?
Great question. So I was living in my university halls, and I was very active on reading on different tech forums that I was subscribing to. And the topic of cryptocurrencies, or specifically Bitcoin, was unbanned in 2013. Now, if it was unbanned earlier, the topic of Bitcoin, I would have obviously adopted it much earlier. But the pitch was essentially a peer-to-peer electronic cash system, which was completely decentralized, and there was no authority controlling it. And that network was secured using proof of work. And the proof of work side of things really caught my attention, because I had previously engaged with other distributed projects like Folding at Home, where you allocate your computing resources to do cancer research on molecules. So the idea of using your computing power to secure a payment network was a no-brainer for me. Now, just by the shift of 2013 there, we had introduction of ASIC mining computers, right? Mm-hmm. So it made it very difficult for a regular home computer to mine Bitcoin. And this is the reason why I got into Dogecoin, because I did my research on what assets were the most profitable with my home computer. Mm-hmm. So I actually mined Dogecoin and also mined Litecoin and a project which you might never heard of called Primecoin, which was specifically around finding prime numbers to secure a network with your CPU. And of course, I was living in my halls, so the electricity was free, and I didn't have to stand for the electricity bill, so I just got a bunch of cryptos, and that was all fun, and that's how I got into the space.
Amazing. Do you still mine Dogecoin now?
Oh, no. They have also moved to ASICs, and it's not something that you can necessarily do with your home computer. I wish I mined more, but I'm not a miner anymore, unfortunately.
Okay. And by the way, actually nowadays, what crypto would you perhaps advise mining for someone who doesn't have very developed, let's say, hardware, who has just a normal PC? Do you think that it's still feasible now?
Absolutely. It definitely still is. And I highly recommend anybody who's interested in mining to check out whattomine.com, because it gives you all the information about the different hardware and the profitability of different assets. And they tend to recommend a company called NiceHash for mining cryptocurrencies with home computers, but you usually need to have some kind of gaming graphics card to do so.
Okay, awesome. So that was on the mining topic. Now back to our original topic, which is financial crime investigation. Can you tell us a bit more about Chainalysis? I mean, you mentioned the different services, but do you want to tell us a bit more about you in this company, your position?
Yeah, absolutely. So at Chainalysis, I'm an account executive. Mm-hmm. And this is a very nice way of saying that I'm responsible for growing Chainalysis business in the Nordics, the UK and Africa. And by doing so, I help businesses adopt Chainalysis products, which mainly revolves around cryptocurrency investigations around financial crime, but also cryptocurrency anti-money laundering, which falls around transaction monitoring for cryptocurrency exchanges specifically. And what else can I tell you about the company? Very recognized not only with cryptocurrency businesses but also financial institutions. You might have heard BNY looking into getting into cryptocurrencies, and they would leverage a company like Chainalysis to check this source of funds of crypto assets. And when it comes to regulators, we work with them as well. We help them supervise the industry.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. And actually, I find this topic very, very interesting because for a long time and still today, a lot of people associate cryptocurrency with crime, with ransom, money laundering, terrorism, and so on and so forth. We know that Bitcoin was at some point very famous, notorious for helping criminals transacting on the dark net and selling drugs. So I think a lot of people still think that this internet money is quite the easy way for financial crimes. What would you say about that? Do you think it's true to some extent that it made financial crimes easier? Or do you think it's just a cliche?
This is a very common thing I hear. And I don't blame anybody for thinking that cryptocurrencies are mainly used for illicit activity. Considering, back in 2011, before cryptocurrencies were particularly popular, the first news articles was around Bitcoin being used in a darknet market called Silk Road.
Yes.
So that idea has kind of been held for that period of time that, all cryptocurrencies are used for illicit activity. But what people might not remember is that Silk Road might have been founded in 2011, but it was shut down by the FBI in October of 2013, right? And when we think about the illicit activity that happens on different blockchains, that is always brought up by news articles, right? Because the human psychology is more tuned to negative news than positive news. So when we think about journalists writing about Bitcoin, they care about the attention rate, they care about the click-through rates, and writing about darknet markets, terrorist financing, gives them that clicks. So from a outside looking in, somebody new, they might just perceive that, this is just a money laundering asset, whatever else. But the reality is less than 0.1% of all cryptocurrency transactions are related to illicit activities.
Wow. That's a very, very, very small number. I was not expecting that. I was expecting maybe 1% or 2%.
It was 1% or 2% back in 2019. We at Chainalysis, we have a fantastic research team, and we publish now annually a report called the Crypto Crime Report. And we keep publishing the actual numbers on a yearly basis. But if I recall it correctly, this year it was 0.15% of all the transactions are illicit. So it's a very smaller number.
It is really ridiculously small. So why do you think we still have this this perception of crypto being used for terrorism financing and so on? Because as you say, I mean, it's just such a ridiculous number. I bet that more dollar, a higher percentage of the dollar is used for financial crimes nowadays than Bitcoin. But still, there is this stigma around crypto.
Absolutely. And the reality is, when Bitcoin was created, it did not create crime. Crime existed earlier. Mm-hmm. And just like any other financial technology, it's just a tool to get things done.
True.
And criminals were not created in 2019. I'm sure they existed much, much earlier than that. So it's a definitely funny perception to still keep. And anyone who listening who keeps that perception, it is significantly lower than you can imagine.
I think that one of the reasons why people still have this perception is because of the whole concept of anonymity behind crypto transactions and the idea that, you know, no one can actually find you. Maybe we know that you own the assets right now, but maybe your identity will stay covered. So at the end of the day, maybe it's a bit easier to be incentivized to commit a crime because the repercussions will be less. I guess this is the, maybe that's why, you know, we keep this idea of crypto being widely used for crime. Do you think it's more difficult to track and trace fraudulent transactions with crypto? Because okay, you can track them, but you cannot at the end of the day know who this address belongs to.
Really good question. Is it harder or easier to track cryptocurrencies? From being in this industry, I would say it's definitely easier because when you speak to traditional financial crimes analysts, they have to, you know, knock on the doors of banks, their PSPs, and all of those financial intermediaries, they have their own database of those transactions. And because those databases are siloed, an investigator have to knock on the doors of every single intermediary that holds the transactional data of a criminal transaction, for example. So what that means is that those investigations takes a lot of time. And this is why there are laws that each intermediary needs to store their data for a period of time, as in multiple years. But the blockchain does that automatically, right? The blockchain will always store the data indefinitely. I believe, don't quote me on this, but I believe in the US, if I'm not mistaken, there's a law you have to store the data for 20 years. Because for the purpose of those financial investigations, when a law enforcement agency requests the transactional data from a bank or another financial institution. So the difference here is that with the blockchain, every single transaction is transparent and is immutably recorded. And if you do an investigation today or in 10 years, that information will still be there and you can be confident that it hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, it is definitely easier. And this is what we hear constantly, law enforcement taking down, you know, criminal entities. I think recently, what did we have? We had the shutdown of the darknet market operating out of Russia. It was literally just a few, days ago, actually. So we had, I think it was a German law enforcement agencies that just shut down darknet market in Russia there. So if you want to do crime on a public blockchain, it's definitely easier to trace those assets than what you would see through the traditional banking system.
Yeah, so on the tracing side, you'd say that it's much easier to track transactions with the blockchain, true. But then what about when it comes to linking the transactions, linking the crime to someone? Because and also, I guess, all the legal framework around the financial investigation on blockchain, because how do you go to court and condemn someone for operating? I don't know if the support that you would encounter from legislator is as strong with digital financial assets and with let's say traditional financial crimes. So on that aspect, which one do you think it would be is easier, the traditional financial investigations or more the crypto ones?
Definitely the crypto ones. From what I've seen in this industry, you know, investigators, they just are blown away how easy it is once they have the right tools. And that's exactly what we do at Hedge Analysis. We help making those investigations much, much easier.
Okay, so hands down, crypto investigation.
and don't take my word for it. Definitely find someone who is an investigator who has done financial crime investigations on traditional banks and used it for cryptocurrencies as well. There are some expertise out there that's experienced both from traditional investigations and blockchain investigations. Now, obviously, I come from the blockchain investigation side of things, so might be a bit biased there. But from what I heard, they all say it's much easier to investigate on the blockchain.
Okay. So what are the most common obstacles and bottlenecks that you face as an investigator? Can you share with us some examples of a frustrating moment that you have been through?
Great question. I can definitely share about the general concepts of investigations. Mm-hmm. And you have to think about each investigation as a unique fingerprint, right? And what that means is that no investigation is the same. So when you look at the on-chain transactions, some of them might be a few wallets in between, some of them might be multiple, some of them might interact with DeFi protocols, NFTs, cryptocurrency bridges, the list goes on. So with that in mind, you have to have an open mind going into an investigation and look at the data it shows you and make decisions based on that rather than predetermine expectations, what you expect to see. So I think that's the main challenge there.
Okay. And what would you say are the qualities, the top three qualities that an investigator should have?
Oh, that's a really good question. So the qualities really is to be able to tell a story. I think that would kind of sum up all three, actually, because storytelling is a very important skill to have, because what's happening is that funds are being moved between different entities, different services. So you need to be able to tell a story around what actually took place. And to do that, you need to, one, be a good storyteller, but also find additional information from other sources, and not just only what happened on the blockchain, but what happened outside the blockchain. So it's being inquisitive, as inquiring for more information than what you would traditionally see on the blockchain. So I think those are the main things you would need to have to be successful.
Okay, great. Awesome. So the first quality would be being a good storyteller. The second one would be inquisitive. And the third one?
The third one, I think if you have those two things, you're already good to go. But if I were to add the third one, is to never stop asking questions.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you. And so what would be, can you share with us an example of a successful case that you have been working on?
So I wouldn't put myself in any case. It's rather the clients that use our tools. And without revealing any names specifically, we have had a lot of success in taking down child abuse networks. So where our clients, we use our software, specifically law enforcement, to take down child abuse networks, for example, where they use cryptocurrencies to pay for child abuse material. And this is very important because, to your point in the beginning, these individuals think the cryptocurrencies is the right way to hide their trace. So we're able to take down those network is where I think we have done tremendous success in providing those tools to enable that. What I can share as well is, if you guys are familiar with the recent Colonial Pipe ransomware attack, which happened back in May of 7th, 2021. So the Colonial Pipe is essentially a large oil pipe distributor in North America, and they were ransomware attacked there. And as a result, they couldn't use their technology. So they had shut down for a few days. And what happened was that Chainalysis tools was part of that tool set that aided the FBI to track those ransomware and actually recover some of those paid funds. I don't have the figures right in front of me, but I believe it's roughly, was it 4 million range around that, which was paid to the ransomware, and most of those funds were recovered, if not half of it. So that's another success case as well I can share with you.
Wow. That's actually very, very big, especially the one with the child abuse. I guess it's a great achievement. So, well, thank you very much for sharing that with us. In your opinion, one last question. Should there be more governmental policies regulating crypto? Because a lot of people who are into the space want to have less in general. So as an investigator, you must be a little bit biased, I can imagine. What's your personal opinion?
Oh, my personal opinion. To your point, it's all about who you ask. You ask the regulator, they want more. You ask the cryptocurrency businesses, they want less. You ask me, I would say definitely, you know, there is already enough. Well, there is regulation already there, right? So, for example, in Europe, we have the fifth AMLD, which regulates cryptocurrency businesses on what they have to do to operate a cryptocurrency service like an exchange, right? They have to perform the same anti-money laundering activities that you see in a traditional bank, perform KYC and transaction monitoring, and doing the due diligence on the source of funds each customer has, right? That's from a cryptocurrency business perspective. Then there's also regulation on the asset itself. You know, is the asset a commodity? Is the asset a currency? You know, what is the asset class, you know, quote unquote, regulated as? So from that perspective, I believe there is already regulation in place. And if you were to ask regulators, they would definitely want to see more of that because regulators want to be in control, of course. And as a result, we're seeing different multinational regulators like FATF looking to enforce the travel rule, which puts more constraints on cryptocurrency exchanges, where they have to now transmit customer data between different cryptocurrency exchanges as well. So there's a lot of regulations in place, and there's more coming as well. We have like MiCA regulation. And there was a recent European bill that was being pushed, which will make non-custodial wallets more difficult to interact with if your funds are leaving an exchange, for example. So to your point, depends who you ask. But from my point of view, there is a lot of regulations today, and it's going to come more. And that's just the landscape of this industry. And as more of it comes, you know, our goal is to make sure that we can provide the tools cryptocurrency businesses needs to comply with those regulations and make sure they can keep the regulators happy.
Thank you. Thank you very much for giving your opinion on the matter. I think regulation is always a touchy topic. As you said, it always depends on who you ask, especially with the MiCA. I saw a lot of people being quite unhappy. I'm very curious what the future holds for cryptocurrency regulation. So on my end, I think I've asked you all of the questions that I really wanted to ask, and I think most of our auditors will be curious of knowing the answers to. Is there anything else that you would like to tell us about any upcoming projects that you're working on?
Yeah, so when we think about projects Chainalysis is working on, there's a recent project we just released, which is a free sanction screening smart contract, which operates on the Ethereum blockchain and other EVM compatible networks. And that means if you're operating a decentralized Web3 service like a DEX, a DeFi platform, a DAO, or a decentralized app, you now can check against that sanctioned smart contract to see if any wallets connecting to your service is a sanctioned wallet. So if you're the operator of the website's user interface and they connect their MetaMask, you can check against that smart contract to see if that address is sanctioned. So that's something that I think is really exciting, and it was just released this week. And as a result, we're hoping a lot of, decentralized Web3 operators to use those services to at least reduce the chances of sanctioned entities to move the funds around through the different protocols.
That sounds awesome. Very exciting indeed. I will put the link to the website of Chainalysis in the description of the episode for those who want to check out more. Thank you very much, Peter, for being here with us, and hope to see you soon.
Thank you, Stella. Happy Friday, and have a good weekend.
Happy weekend to you too. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Blockchain Practitioners Podcast. I learned a lot by interviewing Peter, and I hope you did too. I was surprised to hear that such a low percentage of crypto use was connected to criminal activity, I think he also made a very good point when he talked about how much easier crypto transactions were to investigate than traditional financial transactions that sometimes involve several banks. And as I mentioned during the episode, there are still a lot of stereotypes associated with crypto, so you certainly want to share this episode with your crypto skeptic friends. If you want to dive in deeper, you can find a link to Chainalysis Crypto Crime Report of 2022 and all other useful links on our brand new website, blockchainpractitioners.com. If you like this episode and you'd like to follow more of our work, feel free to subscribe. And if you're involved in a cool project and you'd like to share with us, don't be shy to reach out. In any case, stay tuned because a lot of things are coming and we're very excited to share them with our practitioners community. In the meantime, take care.